It's time for Twig This Week in Google, and of course it's our post-I.O. keynote show, which means there's lots to talk about, lots of announcements from Google, and we couldn't have a better panel to do it. Jason Howell, Gina Trapani, Jeff Jarvis, and Matt Cutts. Stay tuned. A very special Twig is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 353, recorded Wednesday, May 18th, 2016. Honey, I live streamed the kid. This Week in Google is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twig and entering the promo code TWIG. And by Headspace. Train your mind for a healthier, less stressed life. Download the free Headspace app and begin their Take 10 program for 10 days of guided meditation at headspace.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover Google, and this is a very good day to watch for a lot of reasons. This is Google I.O., and coming to us from the Googleplex in Mountain View, we've got a great team. We'll start with, who did it start with? It's so great. Let's start with Jason Howell, who is, of course, the host of All About Android. Last night had some great Google developers on the show and was at the keynote. Hi, Jason.
How's it going, Leo?
It's good. Today, TNT will be hosted by Megan, because you're going to spend you're spending the rest of the week there.
Yeah, well, I'm here through Friday. You know, normally at Google I.O., they give you, you know, obviously the talks, and there's a lot of people here to talk to and everything. They also usually have a big demonstration area for things, and I'm told that there isn't a whole lot of that going on this year. That's where I normally spend a lot of my time, so we'll see what happens over the next couple
days. Yeah, I remember in years past at Moscone, there would be booths and very interesting things to do and stuff. It's a different Google I.O. We'll talk about that in just a second. Also here, Jeff Jarvis. Wearing his swag, he's got a do-rag and sunglasses.
It's not a do-rag. It's a goo-rag.
It's a goo-rag from Google. But is there something particularly googly about it, or is it just?
I was amused that Mother Google sent us all emails before we got here saying, "Children, it could be very chilly in Mountain View in the morning. You should all bring good sweaters."
They said, "Bring a thick sweater."
I thought, well, then give us a hoodie, damn it.
Yeah.
So instead they gave us sunscreen and this.
Well, you need that because this is the first time I can remember a major tech keynote outdoors.
Nature. Geeks don't do nature.
I know. Mm. Good to have you. By the way, they're all in the same room, so occasionally you'll hear some cross chatter. You know who's not in the same room but has joined us, and I'm so thrilled. Gina Trapani is here. Hi, Gina.
Hello. Yo. Coming to you live from New York City.
From New York in the White Room.
Yes, the White Room.
Actually, she's at her new place of employ.
I am. I am at Postlight.
What? Now tell us. Okay, so when we came out to New York, you said just on the QT, I've had a very interesting interview. And so the good news is, what is Postlight?
Postlight is a new digital agency in New York. So we do client services. We build apps and websites and platforms and all sorts of little digital things for clients. So some really cool, interesting clients. It was founded by Paul Ford, who people here might know him. He's the author of that amazing Bloomberg Business Week piece, What Is Code?
Yeah.
And Rich Ziotti, who is a founder of Readability. And it's a really, really fun team. I'm having a lot of fun.
Very cool. Postlight, postlight.com. And you're the CTO now. Is that right?
I'm a director of engineering.
Director of engineering. Mm-hmm. Even better. congratulations on the new thing. Now, does this mean that ThinkUp is still going on, or what's the status with ThinkUp?
ThinkUp is alive and well and going strong, as is MakerBase. We We did write a little bit about ThinkUp on our blog, blog.thinkup.com. You know, we have sort of reckoned with the fact that ThinkUp isn't, the business model for it as a standalone product doesn't work. So we're trying to figure out, you know, how can we keep ThinkUp around and maybe pass it on to someone who can keep it going, and maybe as an add-on to a different product or as an additional offering. We're trying to figure that out. But we wrote about it on the blog, blog.thinkup.com. In the meantime, the services, you know, we're running ThinkUp. We're working on it. I'm keeping that going, Anil and I, and MakerBase as well.
Good, because so I love both of them. I think they're both great ideas.
Thank you.
But sometimes one must gain gainful employment. And it sounds like PostLight's going to be a lot of fun for you. And, of course, we love having Gina here because she was the original member of the cast. And I'm hoping we can get more time with you, although it sounds like as director of engineering, you're going to be just as busy, if not more so. But we also love having a developer, especially for Google I.O. So we appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Also from the Googleplex, Mr. Matt Cutts is here. Great to have you, Matt. Oh, you shaved the beard, Matt.
Good to see everybody. How are you?
I'm good. Unmute Matt's mic. We had muted
Matt's
it.
Matt's mic is muked.
There you go. Muked.
Mute.
Matt's mind is mooked. you can probably talk now, Matt. Anyway, no, we hear him now, Kara. It's okay.
We got him.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
It was kind of exciting, wasn't it? This is a first time ever at the Shoreline Amphitheater. Can you remember anybody, an outdoor keynote ever before? I don't think we've ever done something like that. I know Google hasn't.
I think Moses was the last time.
Moses, yes. I have some commandments for you. That was the last time we had an outside keynote. These are the thinnest, lightest commandments we've ever made. So let's start with Matt. Now, I know you're a Google employee, but contextualize what we saw today for us. What does it all mean?
Well, I really liked that Google is not giving up on trying to figure out getting messaging right. And, you know, some of the stuff like Allo, I think, is really interesting because you've always got people who can criticize and they can say, oh, it's going to do this or what about this or that. But I think it's really promising to see Google really not willing to give this up yet. We're going to try to figure out what makes the right sense for Android and for iOS. How do you get a platform? And then there was also this underlying backbone of artificial intelligence and machine learning where whether it's Google Home or Allo, all the way through a lot of the different things, you could see Sundar mentioning that. And as a web guy, I was really happy to hear him call out progressive web apps and the accelerated mobile pages because, you know, to have the CEO saying, hey, this is important and here's the kind of speed improvement you can get, I think that's really nice.
I actually stand corrected. Windows 95 launch was an outdoor launch, I think, at a big Seattle event. But what Windows 95 launch had, which the Google launch did not have, is a bunch of geeks biting their lower lips and dancing in the most ungainly fashion
possible.
That is unfortunate.
Thank you
very
much.
We're not going to dance today.
No dancing. No dancing. No, I agree with you. In fact, I've been wondering for a while what Google was going to do in messaging. You know, here's Facebook announcing bots. Apple's coming on strong with messages. Google kind of looked like they were Hangouts was kind of abandoned. When I got my Google Fi phone, it said, oh, don't use Hangouts, use Messages. And I thought, well, what are you doing, Google? You're leaving this on the table. So, in fact, I would say overall, and I'd love to hear what you guys think, my sense of this is Google's in a challenging position because they're kind of capitalizing on something that's been going on for 10 years, this machine learning platform. Artificial intelligence is getting smarter and smarter, but it's not like a revolutionary new product. So it's not like they can say, hey, as Apple might, we've had this under the covers for 10 years. Here's machine learning. No. But what I do think is that they're finally they're stepping forward and saying, you know, when I see other companies doing things with bots and messaging, Google didn't jump on that bandwagon. They worked on it and they had something very compelling with, I think, Allo, and we'll talk about it. Same thing with, you know, I was looking at my Amazon Echo. Gosh, you know, where's Google in all this and Apple and Microsoft and everybody else? And they've responded. And I think so. These are evolutionary products, but they are a very exciting product. You agree, Jeff?
Yeah, I think it is interesting that Google is playing catch up, let's be honest, to Amazon with Echo now Home, to Facebook with WhatsApp and now Allo, and to FaceTime with Duo. So that feels a little yucky that it's catch up. On the other hand, if you think of the advantages that Google has in these areas, that it knows more about me and my needs. It has the artificial intelligence at work. It has certainly the natural language processing and the database of language that beats anybody. And so what's really important today, I think, is Google Assistant and the fact that it...
it's kind of the overarching capability that's in all of these products.
What I don't really understand is, I guess in a sense, Google had to start Allo, so it had a platform for that. But I would imagine that underlying intelligence, Google knows you, Google will anticipate what your needs are and be assistive to you, could occur across many, many platforms in many directions. And that's where that goes. To be honest, I think, though, with Allo, whatever how you say it, Allo, is that it sorry to bring this up, Gina, but it does have a little bit of the sniff of Wave.
In a good way. In a good way.
Yeah, in a good way, but it's kind of like, do they have to go through a lot of hoops to raise this up and get their big adoption, which could lose the attention to the underlying technology, which is really good?
God, I hope not. I mean, you're saying...
I'm not too.
Saying that we're a little snake bit from all of the great things that Google has announced and abandoned over time. It's getting hard for Google to say, oh, we got a new messaging app. This is the one you want to use.
You should all use it and move all your contacts over there. What I'm saying is that's going to be very hard. So my fear is people are going to say, well, they did messaging and it sure failed. When that's not the point. The point, and neither is the point to shout or whisper.
That was kind of silly, but it'll be fun. The idea that you can make your text larger or smaller with a little slider.
Padre and I were standing around when Jason was trying to message Colleen here to make sure we were all in sequence. And so we said, just shout it and she'll hear it. My fear is that I think people will look at the numbers of Allo and say, oh, well, Google tries again. And that's not really the point. The underlying technology and the underlying new relationship it has with me to truly be it's the bot of all bots. That's what it's really about, I think.
That's kind of how I feel. Jason Howell, we've all kind of at this point kind of made fun of and experienced the Facebook bots and how annoying they feel like stalkers. I had to kind of finally just I literally had to block that stupid weather one. I couldn't turn it off. I said, cancel, stop, go away. Finally had to block it. It feels to me, Jason, like this is Google has done it right. This is how bots ought to be. You're really not talking to a bot. You're talking to an intermediary who then summons the appropriate bot.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. I want to kind of dig in a little bit on kind of that interaction with Assistant from within the messaging app. I will say, though, that I feel a little stung at this point, kind of what you were talking about, Jeff, right? Like, I feel like there's so many different, like, outside of just Google's efforts in messaging, just messaging in general. Yes, it's super important, but like, even for today, just kind of coordinating this meeting, I have so many different options. I have a folder filled with messaging options. Every new entrant to the category brings with it more confusion on what person is attached to that particular messaging platform. I think that the things that Allo is offering are new, they're different, they're interesting because of kind of that smart contextual stuff behind the scenes. I just wonder why it wasn't, I don't know, sandwiched into something they already had, that because I think kind of splintering it out into its own thing might send the wrong message to people.
What do you think, Gina?
I don't know. I think maybe the weariness with all the different app choices might be an early adopter problem and maybe not a mainstream problem. I mean, I get it. I mean, I think the messaging problems, I think of people and then think, oh, are they on are they Facebook? Did I hang out with them last? Like, what was the last way that I communicated with this person successfully? And then I go to that app. And that's a problem kind of bigger than Google. But as for Allo, I mean, I was saying, please don't say Wave. I mean, what was going on with Wave is like they were introducing a whole new category of app. Like there really wasn't anything like Wave before, and that it just you know, was a conglomeration of a bunch of things. It's very clear what Allo is, right? Like, it's a messaging app. We all know what that is. And what I like about it is that there's some genuinely good, or at least from what I could tell from the keynote, good innovation there. I was like, oh yeah, I want to use that. I want to try that. There were things about it that I really like. So I welcome that. And I mean, I don't know, Google does tend to be like, all right, well, let's just, you know, build this new app instead of trying to improve, you know, this old one, like in Hangouts in this case. But, you know, I think that might be just kind of part of the game with social apps. You know, you just kind of have to, you know, build a thing and see what kind of adoption it gets, and then just start, you know, start fresh, at least from a branding perspective.
Here's the key, though. We all need to use a messaging app, right? If you're using a smartphone, you have to use a messaging app. And Google has made it possible on Android to use – I'm using Google Messenger as my standard SMS app. Which means I use it for SMS, and I have some of those features in SMS, but then I can also use it as a data-only messaging app with other people who use Facebook Messenger, kind of like Apple's Messages. Isn't that kind of make it a little bit different? Because you have to choose one. And if Google starts bundling this into Android and make it the default, I hope they will make it the default messaging app in Android, doesn't that give you this great starting point? And then people's things like the instant replies from Inbox – well, are so useful in Inbox.
Oh, those are so good. It's crazy how much I use those.
And wouldn't you want that in a texting app?
And you know what's going to happen? Yeah, absolutely.
Can't hear you.
Go ahead, Jeff. Because you're all in the same room, we're going to do is I'm going to call on you. So, Jeff Jarvis. Oh. And then, Matt, you're next.
That takes away my usual obnoxious interrupting all the time.
Well, you can interrupt, but we'll just hear you in the distance.
I could filibuster now and just do that, which is my other trick.
No, we can also cut you off.
Hey. Now I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, the instant replies in Inbox we were talking about, and how that
– all
you need is one wedge in an app like this to get people using it, and then it can snowball.
But here's the thing. I said this a few weeks ago when I was on the show, or I said it on .nyc. What I imagine is going to happen is somebody's going to say, did you say that, or was that Google's reply?
Yeah, but they don't. Gina, isn't this your experience? It learns, and it gives replies that are uncannily like the ones you would be giving. And they even said this. They're unique to everybody.
Yeah. So they use a lot of exclamation points in my case.
I wonder why, Jeff. Matt, have you been using this? I mean, are they soak testing this with Googlers or?
They usually do a lot of testing with Googlers. I've been trying to ramp down my dog fooding a little bit to kind of get a regular person's experience.
Regular person's experience. Trust me.
It's handy to sort of see, okay, like, for example, last night I was Danny Sullivan's in town for Google I.O. And so we were talking, but we were DMing on Twitter. But what was interesting to me is I was navigating to that hotel, and it was the first time in 6 months that I remember, like, whoa, the Google voice recognition didn't exactly nail when I was saying a destination. So I think if you think about what Google's good at, there's a lot of machine learning, there's a lot of artificial intelligence, there's a lot of voice recognition stuff. And then Google needs to figure out how to encapsulate that well, whether it's an agent, a bot, you know, an app. That's a difficult problem, but I think it's heartening to me that Google is trying to figure out the right way to approach that, and I do think that there's a lot of value to be added, just like with the smart replies in Inbox, smart replies to chat, there's a lot of just annoyance in the world that Google could really help with if we can find a way, or if Google can find a way to balance all the constraints correctly.
I also think that, and this was at the very end of the keynote, they threw this thing, the Android Instant Apps, in, and the idea is you don't have to have an app installed. If you call on your phone to do something it doesn't know how to do, it will get a little piece of the appropriate app, and it'll quickly know how to do it. And I think that this dovetails interestingly with Allo, and I think it makes what's going to start happening, and I think it's about time, is instead of a bunch of siloed apps on your smartphone, then you have to know which app to run, and you have to install the app first, and blah blah blah. Smartphone becomes more monolithic, and I think Allo has the option, has the chance of becoming that kind of user interface. Allo plus the Google Assistant, aka OK Google, that your phone now is getting more and more like an assistant with multiple capabilities and the ability to learn more capabilities as you ask it to do. We won't think about apps anymore. We will just interact with our phone, and I will just – and that's where I think Allo is going to be genius. I'm going to say I need a reservation for dinner for two. Jeff?
I think you're right. I think it's more, even more than that. It's
Google doing what it does these days, which is strike blows for the open web. And so I think that the instant apps pulls the pieces of an app out to make them useful without you having to install them, which is good for both sides, right? It's good for the open web because the web can now get to earlier search could get to things in apps now, and you could interact with apps otherwise. Now you can get to the pieces of app without installing them. But also, if you like what you see when you're there, you might install it as well and become a user. So it does become customer acquisition for apps in the play world. So it works to me very well both ways, but it really is, I think, an open web initiative. I don't know what everybody else thinks.
Or open platform, because it's not just the web. I mean, it's if I say I want to
pull the app into the web. It pulls the app into the browser.
Well, yeah. It means to me that the phone is less monolithic.
Yes.
Well, it's Android only, though, right? I mean, this is because it's as far as I understood, that's not going to work on iOS. I actually am.
Actually, Allo is available on iOS.
Well, Allo was available, but the Android Instant Apps.
It's not. And that's going to be a little problem for Apple. You know what else is available on iOS is Gboard, the new Google keyboard, which already introduced some of these features. And I was actually a little bereft when I tried it on iOS. I said, I want this on Android. That's why they didn't make one for Android. They're moving these capabilities into Android in a very interesting way. You're an iOS user, I guess.
Me?
Yeah.
I have an iPod Touch to like try out stuff that isn't available on Android. But I got to tell you, the Instant Apps announcement, like that for me, that was the big like boom mic drop.
Me too.
What? How is this happening? I mean, like as an Android developer, I was like, wait, what? How is this happening? What is? They're downloading part of the app on the fly and displaying the like. So cool. So cool.
And does it mean they implied that it would be your same app. You'd have to modularize it more. There must be some mechanism for saying, well, I need these resources if you want this part. These are the parts of the app you could call on.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, honestly, Android development has like been moving in that way, like fragments and like the way that you structure your app is very modular, and it has been for several iterations now. So I can see, I imagine that modularization process, which I'm not sure what the details are, but I'm sure it's not that difficult to implement. I'm still just like, how does that work? Like how fast can perform in a real world situation if I'm on 4G or even 3G, you know, like how does that work? I really want to see it, but I was really impressed and excited about that as an Android developer from an acquisition point of view, user acquisition point of view.
Do you feel like Allo is kind of the on phone analog of Google Home, the new physical hub that they announced? It feels like really what Google's doing is putting Google everywhere. Google, they've now coined the name. Is this new, Matt, calling it Google Assistant? Is that something new?
I think that is new.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they needed that because we didn't know what to call it. We have Siri, we have Cortana, we have Alexa. But
yeah. You name it.
Yeah. So Google Assistant now. And the idea is let's put it everywhere. It's on your phone. It's in your house. You talk to it. It will respond. It seems like it will respond in a similar way no matter what platform you use. I think that's very compelling, man. This is the science fiction dream that I had for a long time.
Well, and if you think about it, a very good way to think about Google is Google cares about how people get to Google. How do people typically get to a Google? Well, get to a Google search, they get there via a browser. Okay, well, we need to have a browser. And in fact, it's called Chrome because it tries to get all the Chrome out of the way, you know? And well, how else do people get to, you know, Google? Well, they'll use a mobile operating system. Oh, okay, that's interesting. They'll use a laptop like a Chromebook. Okay, well, that's interesting. And so over and over again, you can see Google being very worried about people who can get in between users and Google and add barriers or obstacles. And so I do think it's a pretty smart way to think about it as if you can do voice recognition, if you can do the machine learning, if you can be a useful assistant, the mechanism of exactly how that gets delivered, whether it's a little hockey puck beside you or whether it's in your Google Now or your Google Assistant, I think Google is pretty agnostic about that, but they want people to be able to do that and thinking about how to get around those barriers so that users can do those searches with the minimal amount of friction is a pretty good way to think about what Google might or might not do.
Well, and speaking of which, neither Allo nor Duo require a Google account. They're both tied to your phone number, not to your Google account.
because there's so many people around the world who don't have Google accounts, or, you know, that's just another element of friction. And so I think, you know, maybe you know the phone number of your friend and you don't know their email address or something like that, making it as easy as possible that you can have those interactions without worrying about join here, OAuth to whatever, that kind of stuff, just makes it a lot easier. So.
Is it the end of Hangouts?
I think I saw on Twitter they need to clarify what's going on with Google Voice and Hangouts and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's a fair knock, because you can try to have a monolithic communication app, or you can say, oh, no, it's actually better to break it into different ones, like Facebook split out Messenger, you know, and the right answer might evolve over time. But I do think Google needs to do a better job of saying, okay, here's what happens with Google Voice. Here's what happens with Google Hangouts, because, you know, like you like Google Voice. You've used it a lot in your past, or Google Fi. You know,
right.
I love Google Fi. I'm going to use it when I'm going abroad in a few weeks, and that's very well supported. But how exactly all those pieces interact, I think Google could do a better job of explaining what their future roadmap looks like.
What do you think, Jason? Is it the end of Hangouts?
I don't know how they can exist at the same time, how Allo and Duo can exist side by side with Hangouts, because yes, Allo and Duo bring their own expanded functionality, but I feel like Hangouts, I mean, it was basically like the next iteration of Hangouts was kind of how I saw it, and they did a great job with it. I'm very excited to use it, but I don't know, like I was saying earlier, there's so much confusion already that when you have a messaging app and a smart messaging app, you have a messaging app that has video chat, and then you have a video chat app, I don't know how they coexist without doing some sort of either elimination or convergence, or I don't know how they treat that, but it feels a little messy as far as that's concerned.
We need more clarification. And they were quick to say that Allo isn't available till summer and Duo is not available till summer. What do you like? How do you like this thing, Jeff, where the knock-knock thing, where when you call somebody, they see you before they answer?
Right. So what it really struck me is that's the end of Alexander Graham Bell. It's the end of the bell. It's the end of the ringtone. And all that idea is that, and it also means that you've now got to sell your call, because nobody wants to talk on the phone, right? Nobody likes that anymore. So it's going to be, I'm doing something crazy. You got to talk to me right now.
Hi, hi, hi. Like his daughter. Like, hi. Daddy, talk to me. Daddy, talk to me.
Yeah. It's oh, could you not talk to me? Pick up my phone, please.
It's going to be a whole new way of calling. I wonder if we're going to get an unusual number of. Well, never mind. I won't go there.
Of sexual matters.
Yes, you knew exactly where I was going.
Of course I do, Leo. I know you want to. That's your sexual pause.
Well, because Oh yeah, you know me so well now. You know my sexual pause. Okay. You know this pause. This is the one where we go to commercial pause. No, but I do think there are going to have to be controls in there, because otherwise I'm going to get a disproportionate number of knock-knock jokes on my phone from strangers. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we need a safe word, don't we?
We do.
Okay. Hey, we're having fun. This is great. These guys are all, well, except for Gina. Gina's in her new office at her brand new job. It's nice that they let you do that. Thank you. We appreciate that. And then the rest of them are all at the Googleplex. And we want to thank a couple of people at Google for giving us the office space. Chris DeBona immediately emailed. You remember Chris was the host of Floss Weekly. He's a manager of open source programs at Jeff, are you trying to get my attention? Hey,
this is Richard Hay.
And Richard Hay, we want to thank Richard Hay for setting us up there. There's Richard. Thank you, Richard. And thank you to Balzar the Conehead.
Who's over your head.
Yeah. We're apparently in Conehead 3, the room, the Google conference room. No, really appreciate that. Chris reached out as soon as we said, hey, we want to be there. We know how we're going to do this. And he helped us out. And then Richard and the team there at Google. So thank you for providing us.
So great. Thank you.
Yeah, really good job. And thank you, Matt, for coming over. I bet you have a few other things you'd like to be doing. We really appreciate it. If you want to cut out anytime.
I'm delighted. Someone instant messaged me and they're like, can you come to building 1225? I was like, for Twig? And like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
Yay.
So thank you for.
Always a thrill to have you. Yeah. Our show today, we'll move through these ads pretty quickly because there's so much to talk about. But I do want to thank our sponsors as well, because they make this all possible. It's not a cheap thing to do what we do here at Twit.
Boy, I love Blue Apron. I love when we come home and there's the Blue Apron box on the porch. And I know I didn't have to shop today. I don't have to plan a meal because inside there is going to be something amazing. And I'm going to have it ready in 40 minutes. The house smells great. You're cooking stuff you never would have thought of. And I owe it all to Blue Apron. Blue Apron sends you all the ingredients for an amazing meal. Not one thing extra, though. So you get exact, you know, if you need a clove of garlic, you get a clove of garlic. So there's no waste. By the way, fabulous stuff. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. And because, you know, at this point, they're like a big deliverer of food. They want to make a more sustainable food system and set high standards for ingredients and build a community of home chefs. And really, that's what's happening with Blue Apron. All the seafood, everything's fresh. The box is refrigerated, but there's nothing frozen. Seafood is sourced sustainably. The beef is raised humanely. The chickens are free range. It's stuff you want to feed your family. The pork is raised naturally. The vegetables are all from local farms, regenerative farming practices. So it's healthful stuff. And there's less waste because you're getting exactly what you need. And I could tell you this. Every bite gets eaten because these are amazing meals. Delicious. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaska salmon, heirloom tomatoes, you're getting the best food. And they have plans for couples, but they also have family plans with kid-friendly ingredients. So it's a great way to cook together. Research shows, believe it or not, Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. And the kids learn that it's fun to cook. It's great to cook. It's the message you want to send. And it's less than $10 a meal. So if you've been eating out, you know, you're tired, you get home. Oh, let's just do order out or take out or let's eat out. No, cook. And you will with amazing stuff. And every meal comes with step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe cards, pre-portioned ingredients, and there's videos online to help you through it. Cook meals like crispy cod and cabbage slaw tacos with pepita, pineapple, and avocado salsa. My mouth always waters during these ads. It's just very hard to do them. Look at that, chicken steam buns with fresh breakfast radish. I don't even know what that is. Cucumber kimchi. That's the other thing. You're going to use ingredients you've never used before, but you're going to get comfortable with them, and you'll be using them again. It makes you a better cook. Middle Eastern chicken and chickpea stew with pita croutons. Crispy catfish and yuzu koshu udon. I don't even know what that is, but it's good. I can tell. Here's the deal. Go there. We've got two meals free for you, waiting for you. BlueApron.com/twit. They deliver to 99% of the continental United States, surely to you. BlueApron.com/twit. Two meals free waiting for you right now. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. So Allo and Duo, two new apps we'll see sometime this summer. With a lot of smarts built into Allo, I think it's a better way to do messaging bots, but it's not the only new thing. I think the Google Home is very interesting, too. This is basically a speaker to take on the Amazon Echo. And the fact that it works with Chromecast and Chromecast Audio means it's the answer to my dreams. Gina, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. You know, it's funny. My Anil, my co-founder, loves the Echo and would talk about how great the Echo was. And it was around the time that I got my Google Wear watch. And I was like, I mean, it's the watch, except it just sits in one place in your house. He's like, no. And I was like, it's Google. I mean, I'd love to see the Google version of this. And so now we have it. And it's cute. It's small. When he walked out with it, I was like, oh,
much
that's
cuter
like,
than
tiny.
The Echo. Yeah.
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 The fact that it becomes a multimedia center in your house that you could say, play on the living room TV.
That's huge. That's
what the Echo doesn't do that I really wanted it to do. You can make it do that with some extra hardware, but this just kind of happens. It's Chromecast audio support, Chromecast video support. Jason Howell, are you going to run out and get one? We don't know what the price is. We don't know when it'll be available. Sometime later this year is all they say.
Yeah. Later this year is all we have right now. Yeah, I mean, I've been so on the fence of getting the Echo very recently because you just keep hearing about it. Everybody's so dang, you know, happy with their experience with the Echo. So I've been on the fence, but I wanted to wait and see if Google had their own coming out. So obviously they do. Yes, I'm on board. One thing that we're not going to get, from what I understand, right out of the gate is multi-account capability. So for a shared device, that could be
that's
a little
not
bit
good.
Of a challenge.
So it's going to be on my Google account.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be
oh,
to a
no.
account.
See, the Echo lets me switch
they're
accounts.
They're going to open it up eventually, but they say that. So keep that in mind. But yes, I'm looking forward to it. really want this.
Oh, Jeff, we've just broken Jeff's heart.
Oh, he's like, you okay, Jeff? You know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. I'm going to want to use it on my apps account all along the line. And no, when it comes out, it'll only be the damned Gmail account. And then I can't switch anything because it knows me as this person, not as that person, and it won't know anything about me. And, oh, Google, can't you fix this? Can't you fix this?
Well, it'll be missing Matt. One. Matt.
Oh, man.
Newman.
I'm always going for my run while I listen to this Google. And when Jeff, you just press the button because it's a completely fair criticism about Google Apps accounts not being able to do everything that Google accounts can do. And I'm like, oh, no, the next minute is not going to. I should start doing intervals whenever I hear that.
Jumping jacks.
I need to fix that. You wouldn't think it would be that rocket science-y, but apparently it is.
These are consumer products too, really. Let's face it. They're not these are not work products.
And it's interesting to me because I have an Amazon Echo in my home, and I use it. I like to do, what's the news and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But what really was interesting to me is I was visiting my sister-in-law, and this was like a year ago, and her kids were asking the Echo to tell jokes. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. This is connected in a way that a lot of different consumer products really didn't, catch on. And so I'm glad that Google now has this offering. We'll see how well it works. I'm hoping that the voice recognition, everything works really, really well. I like the LEDs, so it's recycling. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So the response for this one is, hey, Google versus okay, Google.
She said, hey, Google on one of them.
She said, hey, Google, I think. Yeah, which is interesting. The other thing that really struck me about Home is that it is not mobile. Right? Everything is mobile. Everything's going to be thinking of mobile, 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 mobile. And this is the thing that is explicitly not mobile, which I kind of like. And it makes you think about a different use case around it.
Well, that's what made the Echo interesting, because I think the reason the Echo worked, it wasn't as smart as Siri or Google or anything else, but the reason it worked for a couple of reasons, but the main reason is because you're talking to your house. There is no device. You're standing there stirring the stew and you say, set timer for 20 minutes. You talk to your house and it responds. Or you say, I need new batteries. And it says, oh, yeah, you ordered them before. These ones, yes. That is magical, even though its capabilities are much more limited.
It also makes you buy one for every room.
I have, this is my sad face because I have five of these things. And that, I guess I'll still need them for my Audible books, but
I gotta say, I watched that video for the product, and I was like, I aspire to this being my family life and my home life someday. It seemed like just such a well-oiled machine. I was like, oh, I wish my morning looked like this.
Amen. Amen.
I hate those videos though, because nothing can live up to that. They're just too good. They're just too good. Yeah.
Yeah, in my house, we forgot the costume for Space Day. Completely forgot.
Oh, yeah, that one's good. The kid comes and he looks at this sad face and you forgot. What's our next appointment? It's Space Day at the Hermes School. Oh.
Yeah, my kid shows up and is like, Mom.
Mom, you forgot.
We show up at school without the costume.
The only thing I thought was interesting was at the very end where he says goodbye, because I think there was a piece by Hunter Walk where he's like, Alexa is teaching my kids to be rude, and he's basically like, they don't say please, they don't say thank you, and he wanted that sort of, stuff to be built in. And so for a second I thought it was going to say, oh, goodbye, a nicety, and instead it's like, oh, we'll turn you into auto away mode and all that sort of stuff.
Well, that's the thing. It did have functionality. The Nest turned off and all of these things, so... I kind of like that. It would be nice if these things would teach our kids to say please and thank you.
Yeah, it wouldn't execute the command unless you actually...
Like Alexa says, what's the secret? What's the magic word? Please.
What's the magic word? Oh, if I could have a device that's the magic word.
Okay, Matt, make a note of that. Just pass that along to the team. There should be a magic word mode.
I will write that down. And in fact, so Neal Stephenson, there was something like the Diamond Age. It was like the Young Lady's Primer or something. And it basically was like an AI that would teach this, young girl over until she became a young woman. And I just, man, if you could get to that mode where you're just like, you've got this kid, he loves ptarmigans and birds and stuff, and he wants to know about dinosaurs, and it could kind of like slip in a little educational stuff in addition to the please and thank you. I'm like, that would be much better than just watching, videos or TV. So
maybe you remember the episode of Silicon Valley where they have the artificial intelligence nanny scolding the child.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. See, I was so excited about this idea of not having to repeat stuff to my daughter 16 times. But now
your mother told you.
that was terrible. It was awful.
It was painful.
It was painful to watch.
But you see how we are really moving in the direction of these artificial assistants.
Well, exactly. And again, because it knows how to respond as you. That's we thought these agents would go off and get things for us, right? But it learns to respond as me and says what I would say anyway, and so it now will soon say it for me. And then no one's going to know if they're dealing with me or, by the way, there is, you know, a new Facebook Messenger bot. This is the use of my name that I approve of, called Jarvis.
Right. Right.
It's actually pretty good. It's pretty neat. Yeah. You know, so you tell it to remind you, right? So am I talking to Jarvis or Jarvis?
Right.
You're not going to know.
Well, Google has a huge advantage here because, as we know, Apple is very reluctant to collate information, or they say they are.
They say they are.
About how you use stuff. Google, you know, has been always collecting that information and should be able to use that to make this stuff better and smarter. And you know, it's kind of interesting because I think in some senses, this encourages you. It gives you a reason to give Google this stuff.
Yeah, and Leo, the thing that really struck me most this morning is that, and I've talked about mass media being over and mass treats you like all the same, and I say to my people in media, Google is a personal services company. It knows you as an individual, and media does not. Now, what I saw today more than ever is that Google is a personal company. It knows you as an individual. That's really powerful. As long as the trust can stay up, which I have no problem with it. I welcome my new master all as well. It's good. Come in.
You and I are that way. I mean, we don't mind.
We
embrace this.
But I think as long as you get value back, as long as the user gets value back, they're going to be fine with this. And Google is demonstrating huge value for allowing this personal relationship to occur.
The value is there already for me. It's so interesting because we've been looking at so many Google products like Google Now. And saying it could be so useful and so great, and all along, Google has been building this kind of informational utility, and then there's this kind of criticality, this singularity, if you will, where it takes the stuff it's been learning, and now it's really hideously valuable, really functional. So now cards, while they were interesting, never really took off as a super valuable thing. But this could be our little Rosie the Riveter in our house.
Rosie the Riveter?
Well, it's like that little Rosie the robot in the Jetsons, right?
No, the Jetsons Rosie.
Yeah, it's a little one of that. But you put wheels on it and give it a duster, feather duster.
Did Rosie the robot help the children in the house cheat on their homework?
Oh,
I thought that was pretty funny.
That was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, they basically said, yeah, it'll totally help you with your homework.
But Spanish
for
Apple.
Want your parents to know.
But
it's
Spanish
okay.
Yeah, she whispered it.
She whispered it. Yeah. She knew. She knew she wasn't supposed to do that. So did Google.
I think it would do that. Why wouldn't it?
Yeah.
There was a story recently. The story was somewhere, I think, in Asia about people who were taking a class or a test, and they had cameras in their glasses, which then sent the questions off to somebody else, who then figured out the answer and sent the answer to the people's smartwatches. And so they have the watch apps that's like, the answer is C kind of thing. And the future's going to get a little weird there. You know, how do you do a standardized test if you're, you know, if you, well, my bot will write the code for me. Here you go, you know, kind of stuff. It could get a little strange. We'll see what happens.
Well, I have to admit, I just started my new job here at Postlight 3 weeks ago, and I'm director of engineering, and there's all these technologies here that I just don't have a lot of experience with. So I've been in these meetings where they'll be like, oh, yeah, we're using this stack, and it's this, you know, Beanstalk and Node and Django, and I'm like, Then I go back to my desk. I just start looking everything.
And where do you do? You immediately Google it, right?
I'm sure that my Google search activity has spiked very high the last 3 weeks. I've just been reading and looking stuff up.
There's a concept. There's my Rosie, by the way. There's a concept in programming called cut and paste programmers. And there's a kind of programmers, a cut and paste programmer, because they go to Stack Exchange, they cut and paste the code, and they move on. And you know what? It works. You can do it. That's how I do it. I don't know how to do anything. I just cut and paste.
You can get yourself out of a jam. And sometimes Google has the answer in, like, within the results in the,
literally,
like, the knowledge box.
You don't even have to go to Stack Exchange. You just cut and paste from the knowledge graph. By the way, big growth in the knowledge graph. And this is where you're really starting to see the value of that. And I do believe there's a critical mass where it just turns over. Everybody says, fine, this is too good. We're going to all use it. And then everybody pours more information in there and gets smarter and smarter.
And the end of the media brand.
Interesting, isn't it? Because
you want the knowledge. You don't want to care about the brand.
It's the same thing about siloing, how application silos. It all goes away. This becomes, and for Google, that's a good thing because this becomes your entry point into the entire world of information. All the world's information at your fingertips. That's the end game.
Just as you have to write applications modularly, so in the future should you write news articles and books modularly so that you can go in and grab the piece of it, which it doesn't necessarily fit our business model, but it fits the use case of somebody wanting to get just what they want.
Right. Were you pleased? Were you surprised to see Android Wear? I did not think we would see anything about Android Wear. That shocked me. Gina, you still wear your – and I love Android Wear, but you still wear your Android – no. Mm-mm. There you go. There's a Moto 360. All the presenters, I should point out, were wearing Moto 360s, every one of them.
I got this one at home.
So the one thing that was kind of nice about Android Wear is they had the idea of watch faces where you can pull in data from any data source and automatically fold that into.
Love that.
And I use a Garmin watch for running, and it's kind of interesting because they now have custom watch faces, but a lot of them are really ugly, and you're stuck with whatever that person designed that watch face for. So the idea of, like, pulling in your step count for the day or something automatically and, like, not having to be a programmer do it, that was kind of interesting. I thought that was a smart way to add a little bit of value to the idea of Android Wear.
Android Wear 2.0. So you'll be able to have custom complications, as Apple calls them. I'll just call them widgets. And they could pull from any app. Any developer could put a complication on your watch face in Android Wear 2.0.
Apple calls them complications?
Yeah, that's a horology. Okay, get ready for that. You know, when you enter the Apple world, you enter a whole new world. The world of horology. That's what horologists call them. Watchmakers call them complications.
Oh, wow. Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You Google people wouldn't know about that, but... I think widgets is fine. It just
seems like an odd thing to name something a developer needs to do. Like
complication, like, yeah. Oh, that's just what I want.
That's what they do all the time, yeah.
It's confusion of widgets.
Yeah.
So they did mention it. One of the things they did not mention is Chrome OS and Chromebook. However, Hiroshi Lockheimer tweeted, "We'll have lots more to say about that at 11 tomorrow." So there is going to be. It's not, unfortunately, a keynote, and it's not going to be streamed live, but there will be more information. So, Matt Cutts, you could tell us more about that, right?
Well, I'm sure I'll maybe end up tweeting that. You know, I've got my Chromebook Pixel 2. I love my Chromebook, so.
I do, too, more and more. Jeff Jarvis is a full-time Chromebook user.
I plan to go and hug Hiroshi Lockheimer tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, but isn't Hiroshi the Android guy? So why is he tweeting about Chromebooks? What is that all about? And our intrepid producers found an interesting listing in the Google I/O schedule. Let me see if I can find it. That says, as we announced, this is for tomorrow. It's at 4 p.m. tomorrow. As we announced earlier today, Android developers can now put their apps in Chrome OS. So there's a little hint.
There you go. The rumor sphere has been pointing to the possibility of the Play Store opening up to include Chrome web apps, number one, and then number two, some sort of cross compatibility of Android apps. A further expansion of Android app compatibility inside Chrome OS. So we'll see. Sounds like maybe they meant to do some sort of announcement today, and they had to push it to
that. There was a rumor floating around. I was told that they had planned something today, and they ran out of time, or they didn't. They had to cut some things.
A PR person told me that they did intend to say something about Chrome. This whatever they're going to say at 11 o'clock tomorrow was going to be part of the keynote today, but they ran out of time, literally.
Yeah.
Should we go back to the 2 days back-to-back,
two-hour keynotes to cover everything? What do you guys think?
Yeah, because I looked. I thought, oh, great, there's going to be another keynote. Everybody got ready tomorrow, 11 a.m., and no. So they ran out of time. They just, but you know what? This is, Google has its fingers in a lot of pies. And by the way, we also had to mention this is not an Alphabet keynote. So there's nothing about autonomous vehicles because that's not a Google product. There's nothing about Nest. There was a little mention of Nest, but I would expect that actually that the Home product will be, will it be in the Nest division? That's actually kind of interesting. It's in the new hardware division.
Is Nest part of their hardware division?
I don't know. Rick Osterloh's coming back from Motorola. Remember, he was the guy at Motorola.
Yeah, I think Google Motorola. Hardware is a separate entity from Nest.
Is it Google?
I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it is.
Yeah, it's not an Alphabet.
I think Nest is Alphabet and Google Hardware is Google, but I'm not positive.
You can close your ears, Matt, but that reading the tea leaves shows once again that I think the Nest division is, and Tony Fadell's division is a little bit on the outs at this point. If they didn't get Google Home, Google got that. But it is it's a search appliance, so maybe that makes sense. I would love to see I love Chrome OS. I want to see Chrome OS continue. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Well, the interesting thing to me was now you've got these $499 Chromebooks, which you talked about.
The mid-range ones.
The mid-range ones are neat. And you can get them up to $1,000 by the time you max out all the RAM and everything. And I hear that. And on one hand, that's great. And on the other hand, I'm like, I love my Pixel. I got to have my Pixel. Keep coming out with, Pixel 3, 12 months, 18 months. That is such a nice machine.
How old is the Pixel 2?
I think it came out last summer.
Was it at Google I.O. last summer? So it's exactly a year old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't say a word today. So this is concerning me greatly because I am addicted to it. HP just is not going to be the same.
Well, and to be fair, I think the HP Chromebook will be really, really good. It's just I love the cleanness of the colors and the lines. And so maybe I should get over myself and go for the...
Yeah, but there's things they could do. They could put, Thunderbolt 3 on the USB-C. They could put newer chips in there. They could put... Mm-hmm. I'd like to see more storage, believe it or not, because I'm actually running Crouton and Linux on there, and I could use a little bit more storage. It's a very powerful device. We have... in the studio with us, four teachers who are all about Chromebooks. They all use Chromebooks. They're from the Sacramento area. And they came for the Google keynote, and they've stayed for Twig. But they're sold on Google for Education. We heard nothing about Google for Education. So,
The keynote was still 2 hours.
I know. I understand.
So there's a finite amount of stuff you can fit in there, and the whole rest of the 3 days is plenty of time to tell people about the latest with Google for Education and Chromebooks and Chrome OS. I don't think that it's should we worry about Chrome OS because that is a real winner in the education market and with people who don't want to do a lot of management, maintenance, configuration. So I'm not worried about that at all. I just want my Pixel. High end.
I love it.
But
I love it.
I wouldn't take the lack of a mention of something in this keynote as like, oh, it's on death's knell. There's a lot of other stuff going on during the I/O.
Does putting Android apps on, there's some challenges to putting Android apps, just putting them on Chrome OS. I mean, there's the developer issue, but there's also the issue of, from users' point of views. Is it touch? We don't have touch.
Yeah, I'm still unclear how that's going to happen.
Right. Right.
Interested to hear more about that.
What about you, Jason Howell? Do you think, have you thought a little bit about what that would look like to put Android on Chrome?
Well, I mean, we saw a little bit of this last year, right? They rolled this out, I think, to a limited number of Android apps. There were a certain small group of partners that they were doing this with. And I think, it was very much kind of like the windowed experience of an Android app. Beyond that, I don't know personally. I think it gets a little confusing if you have, an app for one thing that's Android running in Chrome OS versus the web page, the web app and a web page, and why you choose one over the other, whether an Android app is ideal for, let's say, the laptop kind of environment, and what form factor that's being brought in on. Is it the tablet version or is it the phone version or whatever? So I think there's a little bit of questions in there, but if you've got access to all these things, we don't necessarily know if this is their announcement from tomorrow, but if you've got access to that, however many, what is it, a million plus apps from Android inside Chrome OS, I mean, certainly wouldn't hurt. It certainly fills a lot of gaps, and it's a nice addition. I really want to kind of see how it how it responds.
You could do it the same way you do it with Android Studio as an it has an emulator window with it looks like a Nexus device, as just on the screen is a window, and you could do your Android apps. And if you had that'd be basic, but
yeah.
Not what you want.
So I haven't used the new Android Studio, and it's supposed to be way faster. But man, those emulators are slow.
Are they
slow? Okay. Slow. Yes. Right. And again, I know it's supposed to get faster. I was very excited about all the Android Studio, particularly speed announcements. And I need to get into the I think it's the beta channel and get the new one. But yeah, no, those emulators are generally really slow. So I don't know if that's the best way to do it.
And they even said during the Android Studio talk that it was even faster than if you were running it on your phone. So would that be a change from what you've been experiencing in Android Studio today?
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, the common knowledge amongst Android developers is you hook up a physical device to your computer and you run... You just skip the emulator entirely.
Okay.
That's general knowledge. You skip the emulator, you attach an Android device, and you test and run on that. Yeah. Even that takes some time. Look, it's a process. It's a process. And so I'm very excited. I mean, this stuff just takes time. So I'm very excited to see the speed improvements. And I'm especially excited. If the emulators become, useful, that would be good too. If they're fast enough to be useful, that would be great. So I want to see that. I want to see that in person. Yeah.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow what's going to happen with Android on Chrome OS and what's going to happen with the Chromebooks in general. I thought, because there are all these nice mid-range Chromebooks due out any moment now, I thought there would be a big announcement that would coincide with the release of the HP and the Dell and the Acer.
Or at least a free one under every chair.
I thought that, too. What did you get for free? You got a do-rag and some sunglasses.
Nothing, which I think we've talked about this in the past, and we no nothing promised at the session. Nothing, no email afterwards saying, "Oh, and you have a key to a self-driving car awaiting you."
Yeah.
And I think that's fine. I think it's they had more developers here this year because they had the bigger venue. This is four developers. That's the business benefit to Google. It's the benefit all around. And yeah, there were probably some disappointed geeks, but more important candy is a fast emulator, right?
You know what they gave you, Jeff? You specifically? Waze on Android Auto. They announced that. Yep.
Ooh. Now, if I could only get a car that I want
he's buying Android a car Auto, that's an accessory for his Android Auto.
It's true. I just passed 200,000 miles on my beast because I can't find the right car. I need four-wheel drive. I want a small little kind of minor SUV thing. I want Android Auto.
I think a Honda CRX. Let's get him a Honda CRX. Honda has Android Auto. Matt, do you have Android Auto in your car?
I don't. And I am like, Jeff, I'm kind of holding off. I'm like, okay, I need one more car. I'm like, my car is 12 years old.
Ready to go.
I'm like, if I have one more car, then I can maybe make it through to self-driving cars after that. So what's the one more car to get before that?
I think this is the last petrol car either guy of you guys is going to buy, right?
Well, and I'm sorry, but besides Volkswagen, it sounds like there's a lot of other car manufacturers that are suddenly like, yeah, we cheated on emissions test too. And so if you can get to an electric car quicker, that's great for everybody. So, I'm kind of waiting for the Android Auto and see what sort of stuff they've got available. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
I already bought my last gas car. That's the end of it.
You got your Tesla coming.
Feels good. Yeah. You know who else has a Tesla X, Model X? Bill Gates.
Whoa.
He posted a video of him interviewing Neal Stephenson about Seven Eves. Bill Gates did a book review of Neal Stephenson's latest Seven Eves, which is hysterical. And it's very Bill Gatesy. And then he posted in it a video of him driving in cars, basically stealing the Seinfeld idea. But he did it. But okay, he did it one better because he does it in 360 degrees. So this is the most awkward moment ever. Let me see if I can play this because it's just
the most awkward moment ever is when they're dancing.
That was pretty awkward. Here's Bill Gates meeting Neal Stephenson. Bill's sitting on a bench, waiting to meet Neal. Can you get the audio? You're not hearing my audio. Oh. It's the most awkward moment ever. But a little later on, they get in Bill's car and
fiction is so extreme.
It's a Model X.
That I a few times here I say, no, I gotta read some
fiction stuff, and friends mentioned that this would be...
All I can say is he's no Jerry Seinfeld. By the way, look, as they're going by, how do I zoom in on this? There's some people LARPing in the background.
Yeah, I kind of know where the seams are.
What?
Neil Stephenson is into swordcraft stuff.
So that was for Neil, huh?
I thought.
By the way, Seven Eves is an awesome hard sci-fi book.
I just shipped a couple nights ago a manuscript.
Isn't this the strangest experience you've ever had? That's just apparently on the roof.
Cool. Well, it's a time travel book.
Okay, now that you can hear me, I got to go back to the introduction.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites.
With Bill Gates sitting on a bench.
Leo, if you outfit your Tesla with some cameras, then
I could do this too.
Write that sucker off.
Good to see you. How's it going?
Hey, I loved your book. This is fantastic.
This is like a bad Scientology video.
Shall we take a ride? Yeah, let's go.
Are you clear? Oh my god. Anyway, we're gonna take a break. Great panel. You guys are in the Googleplex. Well, some of you are anyway. Gina Trapani's not. She's in New York City joining us from her brand new job. Is there some way we can patronize or become clients of your new employers?
She has an amazing new product out. Amazing.
What? What is it?
We do. I shipped my first product here at Postlight today. It's called Mercury, Postlight Mercury.
What?
It's mercury.postlight.com. It's a tool for publishers, and it converts your web pages to AMP on the fly.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, for free.
Everybody drink.
One line of code. I need it! What the what?
I made sure that it worked on the Twit blog.
You made it for us. Son of a gun. That's really cool. You're right, Jeff.
Isn't it?
What? And it's free.
Yeah, you just sign up. You put in it's one line of code. You put your URL then in, and it converts your web page to AMP, parses the page, and outputs the AMP results. Then you can add a link to the AMP version inside your markup, and then you'll be ready for mobile on Google.
Is that the Google CDN, Gina? Is the page that served from the Google CDN?
I don't believe so. I think it's served from our side. Of course. I came in on this project really late, a couple days ago. I got some code pushed in there, but
good for you! Wow,
it's very impressive.
What's it written in?
There's a few layers to it. The front end is a Django app, and it uses actually the readability API to do some of the parsing.
Nice. Are you back using Python?
Yes.
How nice!
Yes, I am.
That's awesome. Good for you. And this is just a freebie, like, to introduce people to Postlight? Is that the idea? Or are you going to charge for it at some point? Or
We have a lot of our clients are dealing with issues that publishers have. Publishing is big here in New York, and Paul has a lot of connections to the publishing community. And we found that, this is just amplifying your pages was just a problem. People were, small publishers didn't have developers to get the work done, and bigger publishers were taking time out of their schedule. And I was like, this is a really pretty simple problem to solve. Let's provide a tool that can save you some dev time, particularly for smaller publishing clients. It's free for anybody to use. And we've gotten quite a few signups today and lots of good feedback. So yeah, try it out. If you're publishing web pages, it's mercury.postlight.com.
What? The what? That's so awesome.
That's very cool.
And we hope to extend it to, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this. I'm going to say it anyway.
Go ahead.
We hope to extend it to support other formats, Facebook, instant articles in the future, depending on how people take up. But we took on AMP first because it was the easiest and most straightforward thing that we could do.
What other formats could those be? Like instant articles?
Yeah, like Facebook instant articles or Apple's
Medium. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Wow, Gina, that's great.
Really is great.
Nice to have you. Also, Jason Howell from All About Android and Tech News Today. He's going to be at Google I.O. all week, so we'll be getting reports all week long. Yeah. So you'll be the first probably to break the news, whatever Google announces tomorrow for Chrome OS.
I'll be there tomorrow morning, absolutely. Yeah. So I guess stay tuned to my Twitter stream for that.
Good.
Because, I guess we don't really know whether it's going to be streamed in any sort of video sense or not. And
it says there's no
really
little camera on it.
But yeah. I'll be there.
Good.
That's all that you guys know.
You stream it. And also Jeff Jarvis from the City University of New York, CUNY, where he is now the host of a fabulous show called .NYC. Look, he's got his own customized cardboard.
Yeah, it's cardboard 3.0, right?
Yes.
.NYC, we're very proud. We're working on it. We're figuring it out. But please do watch. It's on YouTube now.
Yeah, we're putting it up on YouTube.
We're in beta.
Streaming live on the Twit Network and soon to be a regular podcast you can subscribe to. And of course, the Matt Cutts. So happy to have you. Yay. Who's an actual actual Googler and a Pixel user. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Casper.com. Casper is best known, of course, for making mattresses and changing the way you buy mattresses because you have 100 nights to try it out. Casper combines springy latex foam with supportive memory foam to give you the most amazing mattress obsessively designed by the toppest engineers in the mattress business, made in America, long lasting comfort and support. It breathes, so it sleeps cool. So, and I think that's really important, but it gives you firmness and support and comfort. It gives, but it's hard to describe. That's why you want to try it free for 100 nights. Free return and pickup. If for any reason you don't like it in the first 100 days, you just call them up. They'll refund you every penny. And by the way, very affordable because they don't have to pay for the showrooms. There's no middleman. You're getting it directly from Casper. Made in the USA, free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. Go right now to Casper.com/Twig. Use the promo code Twig. You'll save $50 off your mattress purchase of any size. Some terms and conditions apply. Casper.com/Twig. Promo code Twig. All right. They did not tell us the name of Nut Roll. Android N. They did talk a lot about Android N. Hiroshi Lockheimer came on the stage, but they said, we're going to let you name it. Come on, Matt, what happened? They couldn't get the rights to Nutella?
Well, my favorite conspiracy theory is that Sundar Pichai visited India and someone was like, why don't you name it after this, dish that starts with an N? And he's like, well, this was like a year ago. He's like, maybe we'll open it up to an online poll and maybe everyone in India will vote for it the next day or something like that. And so, who knows? But I think at the very bottom in the fine print, it says we reserve the right to pick whatever we want. This is for entertainment purposes only. It won't be judged. And I think they mean you won't get feedback when you say it ought to be called Nutella or Nut Roll or whatever.
And they specifically said it will not be Namey McName Face.
Namey McName Face. They brought that right up. Smart.
Yeah. Android, nope.
The deadline is 11:59 p.m. Pacific time, June 8th. So I presume that by, the next couple of weeks we'll learn. You go to android.com/N and you name Android N. And I love, I guess this is the Indian dish, Neapam.
It seems like Sundar nice might be trying to slant it that way.
Android Neapam, really? I don't know if Neapam is really the name we should give that. Here's noodles and nectarines, nutmeg. Oh, I like this one. It had a post-it note. It's Narshmallow. The post-it note fell off. Wait a minute, let me see. They took marshmallow, crossed off the M, and put the N on there, and then the post-it note fell off. Navy bean. That's not a dessert. Nuts and nachos.
If only nachos were dessert.
Oh,
alas.
Yeah. Oh, maybe, nachos.
Maybe what they're saying is it doesn't have to be a dessert anymore.
Oh, nachos
anymore.
What about nachos? nuts and nachos together. Wow. Two great treats together at last. And then there's a video of the naming. I wish it were like this. This is straight out of Silicon Valley, right?
I didn't see those. I'm John Smith. I'm CEO of PNI, Professional Naming Incorporated. Yes, we are working on something big. The latest version of Android needs a name. They want people everywhere to share their ideas, but I think it's a job for PNI.
They had Kit Kat a while ago, a jelly bean, a lollipop, marshmallow.
I was thinking maybe since we had marshmallow last time, maybe now we were going to have Narshmallow.
I don't hate it.
Maybe like toasted marshmallow if you...
Chum, do you...
You want to make sure
his name is Chum.
Is inspired.
People on the streets, they wouldn't understand a lot of what we're doing. There's a lot of mathematics and metrics in it, but it's really half science and half art. It's both. It's math and art. It's like a baby. When you give birth to a baby, it's science, but it's a baby, and that has a soul. And then you have to name it.
Nutcho.
Nutcho.
It's a nutcho.
No, not.
Everything is changing constantly. It's a global world. If you don't do it right away, it's already somebody else is printing it on a t-shirt.
Nashi pear? Naval orange? It's direct, distinct. You know exactly what it is.
I feel really close to Narshmallow.
I love noodle because it's got a length to it.
They say if a shark stops swimming, it's dying. I don't know if it's dying if it stops swimming or if you're not out there like a shark, naming things like a shark would. I'm not sure if that's... Okay, so let's bring it in, everybody. We are names.
Don't need these guys, reads the text. We just need you. What would you name? Hashtag Android N. I think that's actually, it's a lot of fun. It's not going to get Bodie McBoatface. It's going to get something.
You know Landor Associates?
Yeah, that's what they do, right?
That's what they do.
Yeah.
I think they created Verizon.
They call it branding. Or nanding.
Nanding. Nanding.
Demanding.
I did see a couple of sharp worded tweets about how it was a little bit maybe of a bad idea to ask people to come up with.
Why? They don't have to tell anybody what they heard. Is there a prize?
Well, you don't want to ask for an explicit N-word.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. But there's nowhere no one's seeing it, right?
And someone said clearly a white person came up with this, although if it was Sundar, then that's not true.
Do we live in a world now where we have to, you know, kind of not have fun because of trolls? No. Let's, you know, if somebody's going to do that, they're going to do it. But it's not going to be public, right? Are we seeing them? I don't think we're seeing them.
No, we're not seeing them. I don't believe we are.
No.
Unless you take a screenshot of the submission before you send it, which I saw a lot of that.
And as
I
think some I may people have are done doing, that myself. Yes.
Oh, you know, that's sad. This is why we can't have nice things. That's terrible. Or nice contests, naming contests. Oh, well. Anyway.
Maybe go in the direction of internet memes and go Android Nyancat.
Nyancat.
Yeah.
I like yours, Jason. Nom nom.
Nom noms.
Nom nom.
Nom nom as well. Like, yep.
Yeah.
That goes to the core of what makes a dessert.
Yeah.
Thirsty Android.
What do you?
It's a meta dessert.
Yes, it's meta.
Yeah, it's a meta dessert. Yeah, we probably won't have a brand name, Matt. Do you think, or do you think? I mean, I don't know how KitKat happened. But
I think it would be cool. I think it would be cool to have a brand name. Like maybe, you know, if not N, go for O or
Nerds.
You know,
how about Nerds? That's a brand name. Nerds.
Oh. I think Mike Elgin was like, we should name it after the kind of people who come up with it. Android Nerds.
Android Nerds would be just an awesome.
Nougat.
I like nougat.
Well, and they have a hashtag name Android N. So
yeah.
Noopsie, Nectar.
I feel like
there's options.
I thought Nutella was a dead lock, to be honest with you, but I think it's not now. So
I think it was not a lock the minute it was used as a joke early on because I can't remember who it was, but I think the posting was, we're not telling you what it is.
Right. Yeah, no, Hiroshi Lockham.
Yeah, it was Hiroshi. That's
said,
right.
We're not.
I think the second that came out as the update, that probably removed it from the running because they never tell you in advance. You never know in advance.
Are you excited about what you see with the new features of Android N? And we've seen a lot of it. The beta... Official beta came out today. In fact, it was pushed to the Pixel C today, and I think the Nexus 6P, if you've registered it, you should get it.
Mm-hmm. Have you been running the old one on your Pixel C? The old N?
Yeah, and we got the update immediately. Stable enough? Oh, yeah. The only negative is there are a few apps. Like every time I launch Instagram, it says, you need a library update. But it ran. Mm-hmm. So I haven't – have you seen any serious crashes, Jason? No. It's just weird stuff not happening.
It's a little janky. It's a little janky. A
little bit.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, you know, and for all intents and purposes, it's been alpha. This is their first, actual beta version of it. So this is the first one that I feel comfortable flashing onto my Nexus 6P, which I plan on doing tonight, and kind of living with it a little bit more than I have with it prior because it's just been on my
You don't have to flash it. It's an over-the-air update. All you have to do is go to the beta site and enroll your device, and you will get an OTA update.
That's really
and you got
nice.
It.
That
there he is. He's got it. Yep.
Yeah. That was an incredible nod to enthusiasts. I like that a lot, that you could get it over the air.
So what's your favorite feature? My favorite feature is simply double tapping the Recents button to go to the last app. I love
Quick
that.
Switch. That's awesome. I know.
That's awesome.
That's true.
Although, okay, so I was listening to the keynote, and over and over again, they kept saying, we're going to fold in this feature of Chrome OS. And each time I was like, you know, direct boot and verified boot and all these security things.
Love that.
And I was like,
automatic
like,
updates.
That is seriously cool. Yeah. So like, you know, Android doesn't really have that much of a malware problem. There's a lot of security companies that are like, look, we found a malware thing in the Play Store. But, it, you know, usually if you disallow third-party, you know, apps, then you're usually okay. But I love the idea that they're like, you know, if you take the best of Chrome, which in a lot of cases is this security and all that kind of stuff, and the, oh my gosh, the, you don't have to wait for 45 applications to
optimize. That's huge. I'm so sick of that.
That's fantastic.
Tell me about it.
Updating and updating forever. Now, are they going to be able to do this Chromebook-style background update and reboot to update on anything but Nexus phones? That's the question. Because don't they have to get Samsung and LG or whoever to update their skin, get the radios updated from the third parties and all that stuff? I could see them doing a Chromebook-style update on Nexus devices, but I don't see it happening on non-Nexus devices, or maybe it'd be a compelling reason to buy a Nexus device, frankly.
It does seem like that Google is always doing a better job of pressing people to stay up to date with security updates and those sorts of things, so maybe some of that comes into play with the new, you know, generation of the operating system. Yeah. But yeah, it is an open question. I'll be curious.
But the way they do it on Chromebook is so great. It's too bad you have to do a reboot, but nevertheless, it's transparent. It happens in the background. You get a little notification, you reboot, and it's all updated. And yes, now, and by the way, 46 apps? What are you talking about? I got 245.
Now
updating app 223 out of 245. Oh, my God. I just do it overnight.
How nice do you need to be? Come on.
Yeah, my I guess it's the Galaxy S7. Well, you can say, update, check for updates every night and update in the middle of the night, please.
My nightmare is that it's going to happen to me like when I'm waiting in line to get my boarding pass or something. And you're just absolutely screwed.
I don't think that – I think that's probably half the point of the reboot. I mean, I'm sure part of it is that you need to. What they said, which I thought was really cool, is that there'll be – each phone will maintain two images, the current image and then an updated image. So it's transparent. You just reboot and it says, oh, good, we got the new image. Boot to that instead. I'm hoping it keeps the old image around for a little bit so that you can revert, which would be even more coolness.
That would be nice.
Yeah, if you ever had any problems.
That's awfully geeky. Who would even know what revert means?
Well, you'd have a button that said, you know, if you're having trouble, you can revert to your previous version.
Android safe mode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Android had a safe mode, actually, for the longest time.
Oh, yeah, but I'm thinking the Windows.
Yeah. When you're least safe in life is when that happens to you.
Yeah.
I mean, Android at Google I/O is definitely different this year for the obvious reason that usually in years past we hear about these things and the new release first at I/O. And we've been doing this kind of developer preview now for a couple of months, so it was hard to do an announcement that really included much that was very new beyond what we already knew. But, I mean, I think the biggest thing there that we haven't talked about is VR. And how VR is intertwined into Android coming up on Android N. That was kind of their big announcement, I think, as far as Android is concerned.
Daydream, they call it, which is interesting because that's the name of the screensaver on Android. But I guess
I know, right?
They already own it, so no big deal. This is not what Rumor Mill had said, which was a standalone Android VR. This is actually much more like Galaxy Gear VR, where you still need a phone, right? And you have two devices. The reference is a visor plus a remote control looking clicker.
Really nice remote.
It did look good. I like that reference design. But of course, that's just a reference design, which implies that Google is not going to manufacture this. They're going to let third party.
This is like Nexus.
Yeah.
As a reference, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think, VR? I mean, I'll ask you, Jason Howell, because you're the all about Android guy. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I was really curious. We had heard a lot leading up to it that there was the possibility of VR being built into the operating system. And in my mind, I was trying to kind of figure out, like, what does that look like? What does it look like when you've got a mobile OS that works in different form factors, but now you're going into a completely different world, almost quite literally. And I like what I see. I mean, it definitely seems like, yes, it's Android for VR, but it's really, you know, it's not Android in the sense that it does every single thing that Android does. It's very tailored for the specific things, you know, the apps, the games.
This looks a little bit like Android TV, frankly, the interface, except it's three-dimensional.
Right. I'm excited to play around with it and see, you know, I don't know what kind of traction it can get. I think it's kind of an interesting thing to think about building something like this into the core operating system.
Yeah, I didn't read it that way. I mean, would it surface on a phone? Would you somehow see some sort of VR? Or is it just that the operating system has this capability? I don't.
Yeah, no. It's definitely more of that. But yeah. I don't know. I'm interested to see. I also think that I like the way they're going about the kind of reference design approach. They're basically giving this reference design to everyone to have access to and create compatible, you know, daydream ready, as they say, hardware, so that you know, the phones can kind of work with this right out of the gate. I'm excited to play around.
Of all the stuff I saw today, this one seemed like the most me too. We don't really have anything original here. This is just Gear VR, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody want to argue with me?
Really?
Android.
Matt speaking. Listen to Matt.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I do think that there's got to be some plumbing to get the latency to work really well.
True.
Because historically, people have complained about, you know, like audio apps on iOS versus Android. And I know they've done a lot of work to try to...
Vulkan-level library that...
Make that more professional. Yeah. So, the fact that there's more in the substrate of Android that now makes things, you know, that you can count on, okay, you'll have this minimum frame rate or this minimum latency sort of thing. I think that is good because it gets everybody on the same page. So that should help a little bit.
I mean, the way Samsung's handled that is by saying you have to have a Samsung phone, a Galaxy S6 or S7 or a Galaxy Note. I mean, VR is happening, and it's everywhere. This is not that. This is more like Cardboard or a Galaxy Gear VR than it is like an Oculus Rift or a Vive. But it just feels like we got that too.
But wait. After Allo, Home, Duo,
yeah, it was all about that.
And Daydream. You think that Daydream was the biggest?
Well, I mean, Allo had some really cool, neat new features. Same with Google Home. This doesn't have any. This is not anything new. In my opinion, it looks exactly like every other lobby and every other VR.
I think it's the back end, Leo. I think it's the developers conference, and what they're trying to do is get people to develop to VR, and they tried to say we're improving the functionality to that end. I don't think it was a consumer facing.
Right. We're going to build in libraries so you can do a better job with VR.
Yeah.
One thing that's interesting to me is there's a lot of people who have gone, for example, from Google for Work or Google Apps, that area, over to Google VR, and the cloud enterprise area of Google, where they're trying to do these really great things, is a pretty interesting area. So to have these people go from there to Google VR, just as an outsider, that would make me think, okay, what do they know, or what's interesting to them, as opposed to a Me Too kind of product. Now, I think, you know, it still remains to be seen when experiences start to show up and hardware starts to show up. Right. But that's one thing that goes a little bit towards, okay, well, you know, presumably these very smart people who were in charge of lots of people and had a lot of responsibility and did important, interesting things, they see something or they're interested in, you know, they see a potential there. That's not just a Me Too product, right. I hope. Well, you know, we'll find out.
And certainly Google gets points for, you know, the Cardboard is 2 years old. It came out 2 years ago. Oh. So they get points for really bringing the low-cost VR before anybody else.
By the way, that was the coolest giveaway ever.
Absolutely, it was the cheapest.
It really was. And it was just like, oh yeah, here's this thing, ha ha ha. I mean, they didn't.
Real afterthought.
It was really an afterthought.
Yeah. Okay, I agree with you. It remains to be seen. What I've seen so far is more like a check mark in a box of features than anything else. Yeah, we got
all these companies are saying is that VR matters to us.
Yeah, everybody's in agreement there.
That's where they are.
Google has some major horsepower. I mean, they've got some big shots in the VR department. So, and they have a big investment in Magic Leap. My best guess is this isn't the end game at all, not even close to it. And when they really go into it, it's going to be more like an augmented reality thing, and there'll be something much more significant there with a Magic Leap kind of thing. But
That's yeah, just... And just to add one more data point. So John Wiley, who was a big designer in the search area, he has also gone over to VR. Right. So presumably...
Right. They put some horses in there. Yeah.
Right. So we'll, but I think you're right, Leo, and we'll have to see as time goes on how that works out.
There was other news in the world, now swamped by Google I.O. Motorola has apparently killed the Moto X. It's going to be the Moto G4, G4 Play, and G4 Plus. You talked about this last night, I know, Jason Howell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, three different devices, kind of. I don't know what happened to Moto X necessarily. We've heard a little bit that they might actually come out with a Moto Z, like the X to Z, even though Sony went from the Z to the... Anyways, everybody's playing musical chairs with letters right now. But yeah, three different Moto G devices, kind of different scaled, you know, for different price points. The Play Edition, I think, isn't even available quite yet. It's the lowest.
It's all for India and China, as far as I can tell. South America and India. Brazil and India.
It really seems like the Moto G Play is essentially the Moto E, but now it's the Moto G.
These are inexpensive, and we really like the G. I like the G a lot. Mm-hmm. It was a very impressive for a phone for $200. It feels like, remember, Lenovo now owns them, and it may be that Lenovo has decided that we're going to go after the low end of the market. We're going to let Samsung, LG, and Google fight it out at the high end. And HTC. Can't forget that nice HTC One. Other stories.
I can't hear you. Matt's talking.
Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, I was just going to say, speaking of crazy hardware, I don't know if you guys saw some non-IO news, but some former Google engineers, who are doing Auto, which is self-driving for trucks.
Auto, A-O-T-T-O, for trucks.
18-wheelers.
Yeah.
Oh, that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. We could see if we could pull up a story there.
Very cool there, because they're not really focused on new big rigs. It's all about kind of retrofitting into your existing big rig, the self-driving smarts. And and long term, basically making it so that drivers of these rigs can, you know, go ahead and sleep in the cab. We got this. We'll continue driving.
Wow, that scares the hell out of me.
Go. Well, you take a rest because you need to rest, buddy. So we got this.
Okay, there goes Otto. And if you don't think it's scary to see a 13-ton vehicle bearing down on you with nobody at the wheel. Sounds like a Stephen King novel, actually.
There's nobody to give the finger to.
Yeah, right.
Get off my ass. I can't stop.
Well, there is the factor of being on the road and looking into the cab of the big rig and realizing there's no one there, yet you're driving right next to or in front of it. That would be kind of frightening.
Okay.
Yes.
And it's self-funded. Apparently, they didn't take any VC funds. They're just like, okay, we've earned enough money from our various, you know, encounters. We're gonna do it ourselves. And that's the ultimate, you know, liberty and independence when you don't need to worry about what a VC guy says. So,
yeah,
you know, they're crazier ideas. I mean, this is one of the great niche in this autonomous vehicle thing, and probably the first place you'll see autonomous vehicles.
Economic savings there are incredible, but I don't want to go against the Teamsters, man. Yikes.
You can now add links and photos to your Twitter, and it won't count against your 140 characters.
People are so excited about this.
Like, we waited for 5 years for this.
It's pretty funny. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say immediately somebody was like, so then in other words, you can just add infinite links and go on forever and spam Twitter with pictures. And so maybe they'll say the first link or the first picture doesn't count against you.
It doesn't. It doesn't solve the canoe problem, though. They should not make at replies count either. At should be free. Mm-hmm. Handles should be free. Don't be this guy. Dad streams wife's birth on Facebook live without telling her.
So apparently what this is, I'm looking at it actually a little bit because we're going to talk about it a little bit on TNT here in a few, is that he knew that he was recording or sharing it to his family and friends. He didn't realize that he was broadcasting it out to Facebook Live. So apparently there's some confusion there on what it means to live stream when you think you're live streaming to a group versus the biggest group in the world, which is everybody.
The video has now been viewed more than 100,000 times.
Oh, my God.
And his wife, Sarah, said she definitely did not realize it at the time. She was occupied, so...
Yeah, she had her mind... Yeah,
she said it. She did, however, realize it afterwards. Oh, my God. Good news, 8-pound healthy baby boy. And she was more mad about getting pregnant than she was about the video, I think, she said.
named Zuck.
Zuck. Name the baby Zuck.
How not to be a supportive partner in the delivery room.
Well, just crazy. You
didn't know.
You didn't know, right? Facebook did release, I thought, a very sweet 360-degree film made at Grand Central Station using the first one using their $30,000 surround 360 camera. It's pretty cool. I wonder, though, how much of it is staged and how much of it is real, because you see families kissing each other goodbye. I mean, it's really kind of neat.
This guy. I'm pretty sure it's staged.
I have to think this guy's not really looking at anything. There's a later. Yeah, this, it feels like a lot of this was actors, right?
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, when you watch it, you know, you're kind of looking around, and then suddenly you hear a voice come in from a different direction. You turn around, and what do you know? They're standing perfectly, you know, a perfect distance away from the camera, having this total conversation about something that you can connect with.
But
that happens, moves away. But it's still very cool.
It kind of shows you, though, the potential for drama, right? Here's the family. They're going to say, these are clearly actors. They're going to say goodbye to each other. And it's a kind of beautiful moment. But it gives you some idea of what this could be if you were trying to do a movie, a theater, you know?
This is not the New York I know.
Yeah. This doesn't happen in Grant. Where's the bums?
Yeah, you know, my parents used to drop me off outside and be like, get back to school.
Yeah,
get in.
Yeah, go to school. Look at this. Now, honey, I want you to stay away from those bad men with the funny cigarettes, okay? Mom, mom. Anyway.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of overacting going on here. But there was a person taking a picture of the camera. That seemed real.
It seemed real, exactly. This guy, do you think that's real?
Yeah, that's real.
No, I don't think it is. I honestly think this is all staged. Here's a guy with a GoPro walking around taking pictures of people without their knowledge. There's a woman giving birth on Facebook Live. It's all here.
There's the Apple Store. Can you zoom in on the Apple Store?
Is that what's up there?
That's the Apple Store.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Apple Store.
I don't know if I have the zooming.
Can you look at the ceiling?
Yeah.
Can you look at the ceiling?
You know, it's beautiful. And a lot of people don't know the constellations are up there. So you should really. I'm getting nauseous. You should look up there. It's kind of pretty. I love Grand Central Station.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
There's the actual troops protecting it with their automatic weapons. I feel like some of this is real. Some of it not. Anyway.
It's when we all become extras.
We're all extras in Mark Zuckerberg's life.
Well, the world's a stage and we're just extras in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Man also undergoes live cosmetic surgery on Facebook. This Facebook Live thing is completely out of control.
Yes.
I just want to say, and we're not going to show that video. Don't worry.
It's Periscope, right? But on Facebook?
Oh, but it brings a social layer. That's the thing.
You know, 100,000 people saw that burst. Yeah. I mean.
What were the comments?
I think the comments were locked into the family and friends that were watching, so the comments were super positive. Like, you got this. You're doing it.
You're doing it, girl. You go, girl. Breathe. Breathe.
My wife showing our family? She never would have gone for that either.
No. No.
Jeez.
No, I was told explicitly no cameras. She knew. My wife knew.
It's definitely a conversation you have before the event. You don't just decide on the
phone. I don't even
live stream this to my friends and family.
it's Honey, I live streamed the kids.
Yeah. Show
title. I think we have our show title.
Let's take a break. We'll get picks, tips, numbers, anything you guys want to share as we wrap this up. It's very special this week in Google. partly because it's on Google I.O. Day, but mostly because of the great panel we have here. Jason Howell from TNT. We don't usually get you on the show, and I'm thrilled to have you.
Oh, thanks for inviting.
He's sitting right next to Jeff Jarvis, who is also at the Googleplex.
This is the best panel ever. This is amazing.
Isn't it fun? This is phenomenal. And, of course, we welcome back our dearest and oldest friend, Gina Trapani, who we hope we'll see much more of going forward on the show. But you know what? You go from the frying pan into the fire. Now you're like a big shot, and you got lots to do for this digital media empire. And I don't know. I don't think we're... We'll only get her once in a while, probably.
I'll always be around sometimes.
We just adore you. And, of course, it wouldn't be This Week in Google without the wonderful Matt Cutts. We just love having him on. What's your 30-day challenge? Are you on one?
Oh, I'm kind of slacking on this one, but I'm trying to be grateful for 1, 2 to 3 things every day. I'm not writing them down, so I'm it's kind of a month off, basically. But, you know, I've been thankful a couple times.
You need being on Twig counts for at least 3 days.
I'm thankful for being on with such a great panel. I mean, wow.
You know, I actually had a bot, a grateful bot. Let me see if I can find that for you. I could make that my tip of the week. In the morning and night, it sent me a text saying, what are you grateful for? And then you enter it in what you're grateful for, and it keeps track of it.
Gratitude I want one that says, what are you grumpy for?
Got to keep your edge.
That was the first bot that I thought, Poncho was driving me crazy. Like I said, it was a stalker. I had to block him. But the grateful bot, I turn it off. But because after a while, it's like, okay, thanks. I don't need to be needled. But being grateful is a very good thing. I think that's one of the best things you could keep in your head.
It's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another good thing you could do for yourself and your loved ones, too, headspace.com/twig. It is I love having a little, he's probably not little, but I think of him as a little Andy Puttycomb in my head. He did that great TED Talk on meditation, 5.5 million views last time I checked. He leads all the meditations. You know, he was a monk for ten years. But he also has this kind of great worldly way. There's nothing airy fairy about this. It really is about relaxation, centering, and focus. You know, your mind can make you crazy with fear and anger and stress and anxiety, make it so hard to sleep, hard to get through your busy day. Headspace can train your mind. Think of it that way. 10 minutes of guided meditation a day, and you will feel better. Your relationships will be better. You'll be sleeping better. The Take 10 program is free, and it includes progress stats and a buddy feature, so you can link up with friends to support. The subscriptions to Headspace include unlimited access to the complete Headspace collection, guided meditations for every purpose, including their SOS meditations, like, I am really stressed right now. I need some help. And if you meditate for several days in a row, you get bonus gifts. It is wonderful. Over 5 million users now use Headspace to bring mindfulness to their everyday activities. Yes, meditating is a thousand-year-old tradition, but it's also supported by thousands of scientific studies that show its positive effects. It'll improve your focus. I notice I've been sleeping through the night. I really was waking up at 4 in the morning, tense, anxious every night for a while. And I just noticed that this morning. I haven't done that in weeks. Thank you, Headspace. Go to headspace.com/twig. It's free to get started with the Take 10 program. 10 days of guided meditation. I feel like they're really making the world a better place. And they're certainly making your mind a better place. 10 days free. headspace.com/twig. It's what I'm grateful for. Jason, I won't ask you for a pick because you've got all about Android. You've got the Android app arena. My God, you're the last man standing when it comes to picks. You got one? All right, go ahead.
Got one.
All right.
We didn't talk about Google Spaces at all. Which
there you go.
It's not announced at Google I.O., but it was announced a couple of days ago, which is, yes, a messaging app of sorts.
It's also a social app too, right?
Yeah, it's like for small groups, essentially small group sharing. You can kind of get a bunch of people into a room of sorts and share on a specific topic. And I don't know, I've been playing around with it for a couple of days. Supposedly here at Google I.O., each event is going to have its own space that attendees can kind of hop into and have kind of shared conversation around a specific topic. So I really, I'm hoping that that will, through that experience, I'll understand a little bit more about, you know, what situations in the future I might opt to use spaces for. But again, we were talking earlier in the episode about Google kind of bringing its search in all these places, search integrated into here. So Google search inside the app instead of having to go outside of it, but also YouTube, Chrome built in, all that kind of stuff. Interesting stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, but Mike Elgin's got what he calls the largest space, and I think he hit the limit of, it says exactly 500 people. That would be my guess, that that's the limit that you can have in a space. It feels like I can't quite figure out. I think probably Google doesn't even know quite what it is. It could be personal, like just you and your spouse sharing stuff. It could be a larger group. It's got some of the Google Plus feeling to it.
A little Google Wave. A
little wave in there. Yeah, it's very... Is
this sounding familiar?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm kind of... I don't know. I'm hesitant to get too excited about it because, gosh, I keep throwing so much energy into different social networks with no benefit. But, yeah, this is very intriguing. So we will see. And it's free. It's Android and iOS and web, which is nice. Google spaces.google.com. You can check it out.
Yeah.
Jeff, you got a number for us?
Well, I picked an odd one out, which is that Google has had more access to the White House since than any other lobbyist in the field and in the technology. Joanna Shelton, Google's director of public policy, visited the White House since Barack Obama took office 128 times.
Wow.
And the reason I mention that is because this is also the day when Mark Zuckerberg out here in the Valley is supposedly meeting with a whole bunch of conservatives to get over this kerfuffle over the...
Including Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck. He's meeting Glenn Beck. I put up a picture of Mark meeting with all the Star Wars characters, and I thought Chewbacca was Glenn Beck. Just a joke, people. Don't get all mad at me. I didn't make a Bernie joke, so please stay easy. Calm down. So I'm fascinated right now with politics and our alternative government out here in Mountain View and the Valley and our other capital. That was my number. That was it. Not very exciting, but then it's a very exciting day.
There's a lot to talk about, and a short number is fine with me, and I'm sure with everybody else. Gina, I see you have a pick also.
I just have a really quick tip that this actually came out a couple of weeks ago, but it was new to me. Little tip in the Play Store. You know, the Play Store is showing you now if an app contains ads. It says it right up front, right on the tin. You know, when you go to the Play Store, it would tell you if an app has in-app purchases. Well, now there's a little tag that says contain ads, so you can tell whether or not there are going to be ads in the app that you download.
As it should. I love that idea.
Yeah, a little bit more transparency about what you're getting.
They did that with in-app purchases first, and now they're doing it with ads. That's fantastic.
Yep.
I'll give you, Matt Cutts, if you want, a chance to flog anything you want or tell people about something you like or nothing. It's up to you.
Yeah, no. So I haven't mentioned it in a while, but if you type into Google Webmaster Blog, we have a blog with lots of useful resources. So, for example, there's something about a mobile-friendly testing tool. That's a brand new blog post that just went out a couple days ago, and you can type in any URL, like google.com, and it will say, yes, this page is mobile-friendly. But that's just one blog post. If you look at the last thing, they're talking about something called rich cards, which is basically taking rich snippets and making it so that you can do better things with structured data, which some people have been asking us, you know, how do you feel about structured data these days? So this is, you know, a nice way to bolster the fact that we do care about that. And if you keep going, you'll find out things like how the web spam team fought web spam in 2015, which is a very interesting blog post to me, at least. So, the Google Webmaster Blog is there. Lots of free resources to help you make better websites and do better in general.
I can't show you my pick because I don't have a Chromebook in front of me, but you guys have Chromebooks in front of you. And maybe, Matt, you could tell me how new this is. If you just discovered it one day, I opened the Files app in my Chromebook, and I noticed I could add additional file systems to it, including Dropbox and SFTP, and WebDev. So if you have a Dropbox account and you want the files on your Chromebook to show up as part of your file system, you just add it. And it's really easy to... I know. Do you know when they added this, guys? Because this is the first... I just like, what? Whoa. Same with Secure FTP, which is great. So if you have a Secure FTP server running somewhere, this would be a great way to add additional storage for your Chromebook, that a secure, safe place you could keep that stuff. And it's part of the files hierarchy, so it just shows up as another folder in your files hierarchy.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah. Matt, you probably knew all about that, but I
actually didn't know about this. So it says install new web services, and you can have Dropbox, Windows, OneDrive, SFTP, all sorts of great stuff.
Isn't that awesome?
That is quite cool.
Very cool.
Jeez.
Thank you.
Yeah, another reason to love Chrome OS, man.
At how common are Chromebooks really with staff here?
Oh, with staff here. Very popular. I mean, it's basically whenever China hacked Google, there was a move away from Windows and Internet Explorer.
Interesting.
It's usually MacBooks or Chromebooks around here.
Well, and Dave Schneider's Crouton, which we've talked about before, and I used, and I know Jeff, you use it to put Skype on your Chromebook. And I kind of
tried.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a hacky thing when I used it a couple of years ago. It's gotten better and better and better, and you can now put Debian on there. You could put other distributions. Really? They have all sorts of nice features in this. He's really upped the ante. And then, of course, contributors have upped the ante because you can create your own cheroot. And what do you got there? You got it? You're downloading it?
Well, we're getting the Android is upgrading, optimizing.
Yeah. Well, they haven't gotten rid of it yet, Jason.
Maybe come that's on, the last time. The last time it will
never again.
All right.
By the way, what is it doing when it's doing that?
It might be. Well, they said the just-in-time compiler made it better with
new JIT.
So it may be. I mean, there's the Android runtime, the art stuff, and so maybe it's recompiling.
I remember reading at one point. Was it symbol tables or something? Do you remember, Gina, why it has to take all that time churning through every app?
I should have taken the time that I was waiting for it to be done to research.
To read
actually,
on it.
I would have had the time to do that, but I didn't.
It has to do with Dalvik and Art, and I believe it's pre-compiling in some way. Because remember, these are JVMs that are being used on the system can read bytecode, but they also can read something a little bit more close to the metal. And I believe that that's what's going on, that there's some sort of pre-compile step. I read about this once, and I don't. But anyway, it's a pain in the frickin' butt, and I'm so glad they're getting rid of it. Thank you. So do we have the new JIT now? Is that, once we do this update, do we say goodbye to that?
I don't know if it's in this beta version, but it sounds like they're shooting for it to be an in.
Oh, it'd be so nice.
Well, Facebook meeting just wrapped.
All right.
SE Cup says, Brian Stelter at CNN, who's a crack media reporter.
Love Brian. Yeah,
Brian is the greatest. Said that that the conservatives did a lot more talking than the Facebook people. That Zuckerberg was taking it seriously. So
he's in listening mode.
He's in listening mode, which is smart.
As he ought to be. And I'm glad. Thank you all for being in listening mode for the last couple of hours. Actually, all day today, because we've had a lot of fun talking mode. Thanks so much to our guests today. Matt Cutts, great to see you. Come back anytime. You know you're always welcome on This Week in Google.
Always fun to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Jeff Jarvis from CUNY. Keep your eye peeled for .nyc. Still in beta, but soon to emerge into the world. Puking, mewling
and
newborn.
Leo will tape the birth. Put it out on Facebook.
I shall post it for all to see. Actually, you're doing that yourself and doing a very good job of it. Buzzmachine.com is his blog, and it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Jeff. Thanks also to Gina Trapani. You must come back sometime soon. Postlight.com. And don't forget mercury.postlight.com for amazing amp your pages. Wow.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on Google I.O. Day. Best day of the year to be on. Well, there's a lot of really good days to be on Twig, but this is one of my favorites.
We wanted you on today of all days. Yeah. Thank you, Gina. And thanks to Jason Howell, who has to go get to work because TNT is just around the corner. Megan Maroney
will start right after this.
Yeah, Megan Maroney's getting ready.
Thankfully, a lot of TNT is about some of the stuff that we talked about.
Yeah, just so continue to do what you're already doing. You can find Jason, of course, every Tuesday afternoon, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time, midnight UTC for All About Android, and then Monday through Friday with Megan Maroney for Tech News Today, 4 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, guys. Great to see you. And thank you all for being here. We do This Week in Google around about normally 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC on Wednesdays. You can catch it live if you want. Stop by the studio, join us as these educators did, or
yay, hey, Google for Education, yay,
or watch on demand after the fact. twit.tv/twig is the website, but you can also subscribe in your podcatcher and get a copy just for yourself. Don't forget, our new T-shirts are now out, teespring.com/twit, TWESPRING.com/twit. We call it the World Tour T because it says Twit IPTV on the front and on the back. All the shows as if we're making our world tour. I know you got the, but made me think of it. He's got, one of our visitors has one of the older shirts, one of the beautiful old shirts on. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on Twig. Bye-bye.